The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana. The news presented by Abraham Donko
and Rosemary Gazy.
In the headlines, disregard for laid down rules and regulations in public service cited for spate of corruption. World marks International Day against impunity and crime against journalists. Traders asked to support GCAP regime to check importation of substandard products. Junta in Burkina Faso to install transitional government as UN threatens sanctions. And EU and Kiev dismiss elections held by separatists in eastern Ukraine. But first, the summary with Rosemary Gazy.
Disrespect for laid down rules and regulations in the public service has been cited as part of the causes for the increasing corruption cases in the country. This according to former Commissioner of SRA, Justice Emil Short, calls for proper structuring of performance systems to monitor public officials. He was speaking on our current affairs program, Talking Point. The spate of impunity and crimes, especially against journalists the world over, has prompted a UN action plan to ensure the safety of journalists, thereby setting up November 2 as an international day to end impunity and crimes against journalists. Beginning this year, the observance of the day, according to UNESCO head and rep in Ghana, Tiso Dos Santos, is meant to debate the issue of impunity among state and non-state actors with the media worker in focus. Burkina Faso's army is planning to install a transitional government following President Blaise Compaoré's resignation. Meanwhile, the UN has condemned the military takeover and threatened sanctions. And the European Union has condemned elections held by pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine, describing it as illegal. The EU foreign policy chief said the polls were a new obstacle on the path towards peace.
Radio Ghana, meeting the news challenge with credible information.
Stories in this and other bulletins can be accessed via our website, gbcghana.com. The news now in detail. A former Commissioner of SRA, Justice Emil Short, says disregard for laid down rules and regulations in the public service is the reason for the increasing cases of corruption in the country. He said performance systems must be properly structured, whilst public officials must be monitored to ensure that the right procedures are followed. Again, appropriate sanctions must be meted out to those who flout the system. Justice Emil Short was speaking on our current affairs program, Talking Point.
There are laws on paper. People violate them with impunity. So we have tolerated and encouraged a culture of impunity in our body politic. Especially in the public service, there appears to be an unwritten law or convention that you don't impose severe sanctions on public personnel who violate laws or flout financial regulations and so on. You see, I believe that we need to make sure that the leadership in all these institutions, the institutions of accountability and other institutions, are people of integrity, people who are selfless, people who are there and understand the concept of service. They assume office not to enrich themselves or to enjoy the perks and privileges of their office, but they understand that they have been appointed or elected to serve, and they will do so diligently in accordance with whatever oath they have taken, and that they will be determined to apply the laws without fear or favor, even if they are going to encounter criticism or become unpopular. But that is what is lacking in our body politic. Leadership is weak. It starts from the top, you know. As the saying goes, if a fish is going to get rotten, it starts from the head. It is so the head has an important role to play in ensuring that there is discipline throughout the institution and that those below the head are also applying the laws and the rules, you know, appropriately.
If you have a situation where the head has put in place mechanisms to control some of these acts, but unfortunately beneath the head, the institutions that are supposed to carry out this directive from the head are also not working to ensure that what the head has planned will come to pass. What do you do in that situation?
Well, if you're talking about within a particular institution, then the head, of course, has power to sanction the people who are his or her subordinates. But if you're talking about other institutions, related institutions that have a responsibility to carry out certain functions, of course, you may not have control over those institutions, but you can voice your frustration about the lack of action by those institutions. But you may not be able to do anything about the fact that those institutions are not working properly. But within your own institution, you should be able to enforce discipline. You should be able to ensure that those under you are doing their work diligently.
For his part, the chairman of the National Peace Council, Most Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante, believes the church has played its role by educating members on the stance of the Bible when it comes to issues of corruption, although he expressed a worry that the church takes a lot of blame when individuals are found in corrupt acts. Most Reverend Asante said the church will intensify its education on the ills of corruption.
Whenever we talk about corruption, whenever we talk about the challenges of integrity in a country like ours, where 70% claim to be Christian, then of course Christians cannot sit down unconcerned.
We have a lot of people professing to be Christians, but who have denied the power thereof. People who do not allow their Christian convictions and beliefs to inform their officers. If churches will begin to let people know that the work of God is not just limited to somebody who goes into the ordained ministry, and that the minister of state is also doing the work of God, the person working in the MDAs is doing the work of God, and that the person is not only accountable to the nation, but is also accountable to God, and the person must look at what he's doing in terms of a calling, a spiritual calling, to serve God through one's profession. A lot of changes might come about. But having said all that,
but you're clear that these are things that the church is not doing.
I do not think that in our preaching we have placed too much emphasis on helping people to realize that the work of God is not limited to people simply toting the Bible around, and that the judge is doing the work of God, the policeman is doing the work of God, the minister, the parliamentarian is doing the work of God. Unfortunately, even the clergy, when we talk about corruption and lack of integrity, even the people who call themselves clergy are culpable many, many, many ways. Auditor General has exposed a number of people. Rarely do we hear that people have been punished for corruption or for not doing the proper thing. Why? Because as soon as such a thing comes, the clergy, the reverend minister goes to plead for the person. The chieftaincy institution, the archives will also go there. And in most cases, I must be frank here, the junior ones who do those things are doing it also as proxy for the heads.
Also on the program was the former chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Albert Kandapa. He said government must ensure that recommendations in the Auditor General's report are implemented. He thinks the refusal of institutions to implement these recommendations is not helping to address the canker.
Every institution that is audited by the Auditor General must have an audit report implementation committee. And it is the duty of the audit report implementation committee to take over the Auditor General's report as approved by Parliament and implement it. Part of the problem has been that the membership of the ARA is made up of the same senior officer against whom the adverse findings would have been made. And it is quite a human being, you know, to set in place actions to punish himself. So we've not been very lucky with the Audit Report Implementation Committee. In any case, according to the Auditor General's report, and the institution I work for has also done some work in this area, we do know that up to the end of 2011, there was no Audit Report Implementation Committee that was working, that was functional in Ghana.
Yeah.
They were supposed to have started from 2003. So they were not even doing any work there to be able to do them. My worry is about the non-functionality of the Audit Report Implementation Committees. People say to me, so you had all this fanfare, there was this public accounts hearing, you came up with all sort of revelations, and what happened? Well, I'm sorry, the Public Accounts Committee cannot do anything more than it does. The role assigned to us is to see whether
the parliament can agree with the Auditor General's report. So thereafter, when it comes to implementation, the law was very specific. It's the duty of the Audit Report Implementation Committee. But to the extent that the Audit Report Implementation Committee has not worked, is it not about time that we find other ways to put in place institutions and mechanisms to implement the Auditor General's report?
Former Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Albert Kandapa. There has never been a more dangerous time for media workers and journalists in particular. They are being killed and imprisoned worldwide in record numbers. They face daily threats, attacks and intimidation from individuals and public figures who are prepared to silence them for their parochial interests. These and other global media concerns have reignited the United Nations Plan of Action on the Safety of Journalists, thereby instituting November 2, starting this year, as an international day to end impunity for crimes against journalists. In this feature, Rosemary Gazy looks at the spate of violent acts against journalists and how best to tackle them, with the plight of a Ghanaian professional in focus.
Depending on the area that you select, investigative journalism, legal journalism, when you go into the war zones, you may be killed by a stray bullet.
You'll be beaten and you'll be wounded. Sometimes you'll be killed. Is that not?
If I'm having a son or a daughter, I will not advise him or her to do such a risky work. A work is very tedious.
If the voice of the people is indeed the voice of God, then what you just heard depicts the fact that journalism is one risky but critical and yet selfless profession that needs the protection of its leadership, state actors, civil society, and all well-meaning citizens who acknowledge the media's role in development. They are intimidated, assaulted, abused, threatened, detained, jailed, and in some cases tortured and even murdered, with many of their perpetrators going unpunished.
Around 1986, so I remember asking a question at a press conference and then 2 days later ending up in prison for 6 months.
There is no story I have done which has not come without a death threat. I got picked up in Seychelles when I was doing How to Rob Africa. At the airport, I got busted.
My camera and my sound man were asked to join the military van. They were asked to remove the shoes so that the shoes would be fetched. Our wristwatches and the tensions were seized for about 2 hours.
These and many untold plights of Ghanaian journalists, plus the more bizarre stories of those in other parts of the world, make laudable UN's setting of November 2 as the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. According to the General Secretary of Reporters Without Borders, Christophe Deloire, 2013 was the deadliest year for journalists, with 89 killed in connection with their work. UNESCO head and representative in Ghana, Tiso Dos Santos, buttresses this with more disturbing facts within 10 years.
In the past decade, 700 journalists are reported to have been killed while on exercising their duties and obligations to inform the public. In 2012 alone, our Director General has condemned the killing of 123 journalists and media workers, as well as social media producers. If we come to 2003, the number of killings has reduced, but still remains very high at 91. The choice of the 2 of November was based mainly on the fact that those two journalists were killed in Mali, and it was felt that their killing is representative of many others that have taken place the world over.
So how serious is the situation in Ghana and the entire African continent? Here is the view of a long-serving Ghanaian private practitioner, Kwesi Pratt, managing editor of the Insight newspaper.
There have been reports of torture, murder, and imprisonment of journalists across Africa. There's a famous case of Dele Jiwa in Nigeria between 1981 and about 1989. That appears to have been the most serious period.
Narrating a personal experience of detention in the 1980s, the outspoken and confident-looking professional noted that journalism practiced the world over has such consequences. Though his imprisonment had no impact on him in any way, Mr. Pratt admits it is never commonplace being in jail.
No, it's not normal to be arrested and kept in prison for 6 months, but it comes to the territory. It's part of the things one expects when he's in journalism. You can be arrested again, you can be detained again, you may even be killed.
Do you recall what exactly you said, and were you conscious of what you were asking?
That was Rosemary Gazy with part of a feature on impunity and violent acts and crimes against media workers. Tune in to our primetime news at 1 p.m. for an extensive package and the full version on Radio Ghana's news magazine program, Ghana Today, at 3 p.m. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra. The major stories: disregard for laid down rules and regulations in public service cited for spate of corruption. World marks International Day against impunity and crime against journalists. Traders asked to support GCAP regime to check importation of substandard products. Junta in Burkina Faso to install transitional government as UN threatens sanctions. And EU and Kiev dismiss elections held by separatists in eastern Ukraine.
TPC mastering the airwaves with nothing but quality news and programming.
The news at 6 continues. A consultant in trade facilitation, Don Smith, says the Ghana Conformity Assessment Program, GCAP, will be beneficial to traders. He has therefore urged Traders Association not to panic as it will protect their interests. Speaking in an interview, Mr. Smith urged the various trade associations to rather engage the Ghana Standards Authority to understand the operational modalities of the program to better educate their members on their roles. The GCAP program is meant to prevent the importation of unsafe, substandard and counterfeit goods into Ghana. The program aims to protect consumer health and safety, safeguard local producers from unfair competition, and reduce the risk that the domestic market becomes the dumping ground for non-conforming products. A former Director General of the Ghana Health Service, Professor Ajman Bedu Akosa, said the program would help check the dumping of substandard drugs and health products onto the Ghana market. He said countries like Nigeria, who have already begun implementing said conformity programs, have started reaping the benefits. The president of the Ghana Union of Traders Association, George Ofori, said although the association is not in disagreement with the need to ensure that goods imported into the country are of higher standard, there must be proper and consistent guidelines.
Vice President Kwesi Misa-Afa has left Accra for New Delhi, India, to attend a four-day economic forum organized by the government of India. The forum, which is a high-level platform for informal discussions on global economic recovery and growth, is reserved for heads of government, cabinet ministers, and heads of international organizations. A statement from the Flagstaff House said the vice president, during the visit, would hold interactive sessions with chief executives and captains of India's industry and also hold one-on-one meetings with CEOs in New Delhi. World leaders, including several African heads of state, have been invited to the forum.
The youth have been challenged to develop innovative skills capable of addressing the unemployment problem confronting the nation. By so doing, they will become job creators instead of job seekers. Former ambassador to Burkina Faso Alhaji Sahun Mokhtar threw the challenge during the 5th edition of the Youth Achievers Awards organized by the Upper West Regional Directorate of the National Youth Authority in WA. Correspondent Swala Abdul Wahab reports.
The Youth Achievers Awards seek to recognize individuals and organizations whose contributions to the development of the region are outstanding. The awards are in the areas of modern agriculture, leadership, entrepreneurship, as well as arts and culture. Some of the personalities who received special awards are Alhaji Shahnoon Mokhtar and Mahmoud Khalid, both former Upper West Regional Ministers, Gaitan Kala and Martin Dele, businessmen. The WA Municipal Chief Executive, Isahaku Nuhu Putiaha, Deputy Chief Director in charge of Finance and Administration at the NYE, Alhaji Mohamed Nabila, and Ishmael Mubarak, a media practitioner. The Regional Director of the NYE, Mumuni Suleimana, said the purpose of the awards is to appreciate what has been done for the development of the region. He said, though the authority is confronted with inadequate funds, it will continue to engage the youth in activities that will improve on their lives. One of the awards winners and CEO of Diamond Microfinance, Martin Dele, said the awards place more responsibility on the recipients and urge all to do things differently to impact on the lives of others. Deputy Regional Minister Dr. Mushibu Muhammad Alfa said the region is blessed with a lot of talents that can be tapped for its development. Dr. Mohamed Alfa asked those who could not get awards to be inspired and motivated so that they too can be recognized next year.
Swala Abdul Wahab reporting.
Transport operators at the St. Chilori station have been left stranded following the decision by the MP for Isujamai, Kofi Oseameyaw, to take over the station. According to the transport operators, the MP maintains the lorry station as his property because he built it to serve as a private car park. But the district assembly says his actions are illegal as the law forbids individuals from operating lorry stations. The DCE for the area, Tamas Ampemnyakon, said for the past month, Mr. Oseameyaw has kept all the revenue from the station, including what was due to the assembly and the GPRTU. Mr. Ampemnyakon indicated that recently a meeting was called to resolve the matter amicably, but no agreement was reached. This compelled the drivers to relocate to an inconvenient site.
The place was prepared by the MP for Sojaman, and GPRTU and all the drivers unions were using the place. The assembly was collecting our daily parking toll, which is 50 pesos. GPRTU said they had already entered into an agreement with the MP and they were paying some amount of money into the MP's account every month. But about a month ago, the MP went to some guys to seize the station, and they took over all the revenue, the one that comes to the assembly, for 1 month now. Even though my officers told me that the MP agreed to pay a percentage to the assembly, he's not done that. And so we have an agreement. The drivers will load by the roadside. I sent two officers together with the MP to the PPP secretariat to find out the modalities for signing a PPP agreement. The team was advised that the Honorable MP should write officially to the Assembly, so we are waiting for him.
Now, but the MP has stated that the facility is not a lorry station, but a private lorry park he built himself. So if he has built it himself with his money, then he's supposed to get all the revenue that comes from that place.
If he built it himself, is he using it as a lorry station? That is what is being done now. He's using the place as a lorry station. You see, we have a lot of outstanding issues. We did a search on the land, and a vast area of the land is a government-acquired land. So the Assembly set up a committee to sit on this issue, and the committee has recommended that we go into a PPP agreement with the MP, which he has agreed. Yes, I agree that he put in his own money, and he must get something back. He cannot take all the money. But the serving at the lorry station, we, the Assembly, we clean up the place, we provide all the municipal services, so we must have our revenue. It will be between 25% and 30% of the revenue that is generated from the lorry park. And so we are willing to get just that.
DC for Isujamai Thomas Ampemnyakon. Meanwhile, efforts by Radio Ghana to get Mr. Oseameyaw's view on the issue have been unsuccessful.
In foreign news, Burkina Faso's military says it will install a transitional government days after it seized power following President Blaise Compaoré's resignation. The move came after soldiers fired shots at the state television station and barricaded the capital's main square as thousands of protesters demanded the military give up power. At least one demonstrator was killed in yesterday's clashes. The UN has also condemned the military takeover and threatened sanctions. Long-time leader Mr. Compaoré quit last Thursday following days of anti-government protests. The army has since named Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida as the leader of a transitional government.
South Africa's ruling party, the African National Congress, ANC, is reported to be in financial turmoil, driving its leaders to pledge to legislatively boost the financing of political parties. South Africa's oldest egalitarian left-wing political entity has not been paying salaries to some of its workers due to lack of funding after the 2014 general elections. The shortfalls were caused by the tight competition with the nation's main opposition force, the Democratic Alliance, in the most recent elections. Sources within the ANC say the party is planning to downsize its staff by half in an attempt to reduce spending. ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe said the party's finances were cut after it had lost 16 seats in parliament in the general elections in May. The ANC also lost 16 seats in the regional parliaments, despite its gaining 3 seats in 3 provinces. The party's personnel is already aware of the management's plan to cut expenses, and some employees have expressed their dissatisfaction with the situation, as unemployment in the nation is reported at 25.4% in the third quarter of this year.
The European Union has condemned as illegal elections held by pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini said the polls were a new obstacle on the path towards peace. The central government in Kiev also described as a farce the polls in the two self-proclaimed People's Republics in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions. Russia says it respects the will of the people in the polls, where the two current rebel leaders are set to win. Self-proclaimed election officials say early results suggest Alexander Zakashenko will become the regional head in Donetsk, while Igor Plotnitsky will secure a victory in Luhansk. The rebels also staged what they called parliamentary elections in the two regions, collectively known as Donbass.
Romania's presidential election is set to enter a runoff after exit polls suggested no candidate had won an overall majority. Initial polling data indicates that current Prime Minister Victor Ponta has topped the poll with 38% to 40% of the vote. His main challenger, Klaus Iohannis, is said to be trailing with about 32%. Romanians are voting to decide who will replace President Traian Băsescu, who is stepping down after serving his two-term limit. Turnout in the poll was estimated to be 52.3%.
More than 50 people have been killed and at least 100 injured in a suicide bombing close to Pakistan's only border crossing with India. The Pakistani Taliban says it carried out the attack, although other militant groups also claim responsibility. Officials say 3 members of the Pakistani border force were killed. The Wajar crossing is a high-profile target, with large crowds gathering every day to watch an elaborate flag-lowering ceremony as the border closes. The Punjab police chief told the media that the blast occurred when a suicide attacker approached a restaurant after the day's ceremony.
Now to England News, the main points again. Disrespect for laid-down rules and regulations in the public service has been cited as a contributory factor for the increase in corruption cases in the country. This according to former Commissioner of Shraj Justice Emil Short. Calls for proper structuring of performance systems to monitor public officials. He was speaking on our current affairs program, Talking Point. The spate of impunity and crimes, especially against journalists the world over, has prompted a UN action plan to ensure the safety of journalists, thereby setting aside November 2 as an international day to end impunity and crimes against journalists. The observance of the day, according to UNESCO head and rep in Ghana, Tizu Dos Santos, is meant to debate the issue of impunity among state and non-state actors, with the media worker in focus. Tune in to the Unique Breakfast Drive this morning, where we'll bring you the full version of the feature you heard earlier. Burkina Faso's army is planning to install a transitional government following President Blaise Compaoré's resignation. Meanwhile, the UN has condemned the military takeover and threatened sanctions. And the European Union has condemned elections held by pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine, describing it as illegal. The EU foreign policy chief said the polls were a new obstacle on the path towards peace. The news was presented by Abraham Donko
and Rosemary Gazy in Accra.